all our Canadian friends. We are two different countries, but days like this remind us that we're like one big town, and we reaffirm that Americans and Canadians will always be there for each other. Welcome to the United States. Bienvenue, mes amis.
In Washington, D.C. today, Pennsylvania Avenue is festooned with maple leaf flags. And at the White House, Northern Coldwater Halibut and Yukon potatoes are on the menu, all because newly elected Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is in town for a state dinner with the Obamas, the first state dinner for a Canadian Prime Minister in 19 years. That's right, 19 years since these two very best of friends have just sat down together, you know, just caught up. I know how it is. Hey, I lived in Canada for 5 years myself, even went to school with Justin Trudeau. It's just, you know, we never talk anymore. So we thought this would be the perfect time to check in with our northern friends. There are big issues to talk about, oil and war. But hey, when you're this close in a relationship, you can't let the little issues fester either. You gotta talk out the small stuff too. So we have Diane Francis. She's author of Merger of the Century, Why Canada and America Should Become One Country. She's also editor-at-large for the National Post in Canada. She joins me from Toronto. Hi, Diane.
Hello.
19 years. Why so much time since the last state dinner?
Well, the relationship has been as frosty as Canada's climate. I mean, between Bush's Iraq War, which we took a pass on, and the bad relationships that resulted from that, and then Keystone, it's been chilly.
And is it because the new Liberal PM, Justin Trudeau, has been elected that the thaw is possible now?
Well, it is, because I think one of the first phone calls he had with Obama was to be told that Keystone was going to be nixed. And he didn't freak out. He said he was disappointed, but he understood America can do what America wants to do. So he was very gracious, as Canadians always are. And so then the invitation was put in the mail a couple of weeks later.
Just like that. Americans might be less thrilled, however, when they learn that Canada actually withdrew its F-18 fighters from the fight against ISIS, refusing to help us in the bombing in Iraq and Syria anymore.
That's disappointed a number of Canadians as well. We only had 6 jets there. We have a tiny, tiny military. But, you know, they have stepped up and tripled the number of trainers on the ground who are helping the Kurds. So they're doing their bit. That's what they're saying.
But what did the Canadian government give as a reason? I mean, Canada doesn't involve itself militarily in all U.S. operations, but they were involved in this one and then pulled back.
Well, you know, it's a different prime minister, a different attitude toward the threat in the Middle East. This guy is a much more peacenik type prime minister who doesn't see that it's as much of a problem, and he's not, you know, as militaristic as the other fellow was.
So what happens to American and Canadian relations when the price of oil is this low, $40 a barrel? I mean, we trade a great deal of petroleum with Canada, take a lot of crude from Canadian oil fields, and it's just not worth anything right now.
No, it isn't, and that's very sad. And the oil sands has been rejected because of the Keystone rejection. So all of that is a very big concern, because a big underpinning for our economy is oil. And since oil is priced, you know, the oil price has collapsed, our dollar has gone down with it, actually in tandem, because it's known as a petrocurrency. So the Canadian dollar, which was, you know, mightily trading at par with the U.S. dollar only 3 years ago, is now in the 60s. It's pretty disastrous if you want to take a vacation in Florida, which a lot of Canadians do.
Well, there's big money at stake there. But Diane Francis, you know, when two countries are as close as ours, there are always lots of little issues boiling below the surface that we have to discuss. What's going on with milk, with dairy? I know that this is a longstanding bit of contention between Canada and the U.S.
Well, we do our dairy sector and our poultry sector differently than free trade would like it, and then the Americans would like it. So we have a closed shop. We have a closed shop for dairy and eggs and chickens and turkeys, and we don't let Americans export into our market, nor do we export into yours, to be fair. So we all pay a little bit more for that stuff so we can keep a few farmers employed. It's a very controversial farming sector, and it's a constant irritant with the Americans. There's other things, too. We can't sell softwood lumber to the extent we want to in your country, and we can't sell beef and pork sometimes. So these are the things that, you know, bug the two countries and the irritants that are ongoing. But, you know, it's not like Macedonia and Greece.
It's not like Macedonia and Greece, but still a bit of protectionism between the two sides. I want you to listen to Stephen Kelly. He's a professor at Duke University. I spoke to him back over the summer about a land dispute at Machias Seal Island off the coast of Maine.
There was a report out of one of the Canadian news magazines that suggested that war was imminent. It's not that bad, but there is definitely a feeling that there's a new element in the fishery this summer.
Diane Francis, Justin Trudeau and President Obama are going to have to get serious about this bona fide land dispute at Machias Seal Island off of New Brunswick.
Yeah, I think he should have a boxing match. I mean, this is so picayune. To even distinguish it by calling it a war would be, you know, a lot of Canadians don't even know about this. And, you know, the waters are tricky because if it's offshore, you have a 200-mile or 200-kilometer limit. And, you know, where does the line get drawn? There's a big dispute, a much bigger dispute in the Beaufort Sea between Alaska and Canada over oil fields around Prudhoe and stuff like that because of the same issue. So these are the things that go on. But, you know, it's a pretty good relationship.
Yeah, now all of this stuff may disappear in importance when the massive migration wave comes of all the Americans who swear they're leaving for Canada if Donald Trump is elected president, or alternatively, probably if Hillary Clinton is elected president. I hope you're ready.
Well, just a minute. This is 34 million people up here, and we're all Democrats. I'm a conservative in the Canadian political scene, but that puts me left to the Democrats. I like our universal health care system, and I like a lot of the social democratic traditions that we have here, and so does Bernie Sanders. Clinton is moving toward Bernie, and so, you know, we're all kind of getting in sync. Trump is another matter.
I would have thought that Ted Cruz was the favorite son in Canada. He was born there after all.
He's a denier. He's denied being Canadian. He's denied it, and he took up American citizenship without keeping the Canadian, which is, by the way, what you can do if you want to.
Are Canadians enjoying the election down here?
It's the best reality show on TV. Every week somebody's voted off the island. We really enjoy it. I mean, you know, we're on the other side of the fence looking over and seeing what this noisy, interesting neighbor is doing all the time. And it's quite terrific. Bernie Sanders, perfect.
You guys love him.
We'd love him. And Hillary, too. I mean, Democrats are, this is a country of Democrats.
Well, then there's no doubt that there's a lot for Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and President Obama to chew over during their state dinner and in the Oval Office. Diane Francis, author of Merger of the Century, Why Canada and America Should Become One Country. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
There's some things we will probably never agree on. Whose beer is better? Who's better at hockey? Where's the Stanley Cup right now?
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.